Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David Mitchell, the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, at the 12th Hour, in Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is December 17, 2016, or Sabbath 19, 2020. We will start our second service on this Sabbath day with a song entitled, Softly and Tenderly, Yahshua is Calling.
Softly and tenderly, Yahshua is calling, calling for you and for me. See, on the portals he's waiting and watching, watching for you and for me. Come home, come home, he will really come home. Earnestly, tenderly, Yahshua is calling, calling us and come home. Why should we tarry when Yahshua is pleading for you and for me? Why should we linger when he's not his mercy? Mercy for you and for me. Come home, come home. The moments are passing from you and from me. Shadows are gathering, deathbeds are coming for you and for me. Come home, come home. What a wonderful love he has promised for you and for me. Though we have sinned, he has mercy and pardon for you and for me. Come home, you really can fall. Earnestly, tenderly, Yahshua is calling, calling us sinners, come home.
Ezekiel 47 River, part 2, we're in Timely Greetings, Volume 1, number 18. We're in Zechariah 13. And we're going to start with verse 1 again. It says, in that day there shall be a fountain open to the house of David and to the inhabitants of Jerusalem for sin and for uncleanness. Now remember when it says, in that day, that's the same day that is spoken of there in Ezekiel 47, and I'm going to turn to that as quickly as I can and read it to you. Let's see what the very first verse is in Ezekiel 47. It says, afterwards he brought me again unto the door of the house, and behold, waters issued out from under the threshold of the house eastward For the forefront of the house stood toward the east, and the waters came down from under the right side of the house at the south side of the altar. Now, the south side of the altar, believe it or not, is facing east. Okay, now keep that in mind. Then brought he me out of the way of the gate northward, and led me about the way without unto the utter gate by the way that looketh eastward. And behold, there ran out waters on the right side. There it is. That's where the waters run out. It ran out on the right side of the altar in the first apartment of the tabernacle of the congregation. It's talking about the temple where they have the sanctuary service. Let's read that again. Now it says that, then brought he me out of the way of the gate northward. Now, this is the court ground of the tabernacle of the sanctuary. This is the outer court. Brought him out the north gate, and he brought him around the side, and he brought him down to the east gate. That's the wall, that's the gate that's inside of the wall that's around the sanctuary where the priest works inside of the two apartments there. The priest works in the first apartment, but the sinner has to bring his offering up to the east gate, and then he can bring it inside the court. And then the high priest comes out of the first apartment of the sanctuary inside the court, and he comes out and meets the sinner in the outer court, and he takes his offering of his blood from the animal that he brought, and the high priest then takes it inside the first apartment, and he does the rest of it with the blood of the animal. So this is what we're talking about, the sanctuary system in operation here for sin and uncleanness. This is, in other words, this is the judgment of the living. Ezekiel 47 river that is opened up, it opened up at the Passover of 2002, when the seventh seal opened at the Passover 2002, at the headwaters of the Adventist Church, which was Gilead Center, with the latest prophet in charge of the candlestick, the seventh candlestick of letters, said that was Willis W. Johnson. He was a prophet to the house of Israel, Seventh-day Adventist. And so, therefore, Ezekiel's river started flowing as soon as the seventh seal of Revelation 8 opened up to close out the judgment of the dead and open up the judgment of the living. Now, Verlis W. Johnson, in the 11th hour, 1970, he discovered Ezekiel's river. He discovered where it was at. And he published it. He published information on all that. And he published where it was shown that Ezekiel's river was the same thing as Zechariah 13, fountain open for sin and uncleanness. This fountain open for sin and uncleanness is opened up in the 12th hour and the judgment of the living time, and this also opened up at the Passover of 2002 to close out the 11th hour, and they opened up the 12th hour to start the judgment of the living. So you had simultaneously opening of the fountain for sin and uncleanness of Zechariah 13, and Ezekiel's river started flowing also at the same time, because they're one and the same. And this river started flowing in the house of Israel, in the sanctuary. It started flowing in the sanctuary because the altar is in the first apartment of the sanctuary, and that's where this water started flowing out of. The south side of the altar, which looketh toward the east, that there in Ezekiel 47, verse 2. Now, having said all that, let's go back and go back to our main study now, Time of Greetings, Volume 1, Number 18. And we had just read verse 1 of Zechariah 13. that in that day there shall be a fountain open unto the house of David. What day? That's the day when the judgment of the living begins at the house of Yahweh, 1 Peter 4:17. And that's and Ezekiel 9, the marking angel, Ezekiel 9:6. That goes through the city, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and start the judgment of the living, start the marking and the sealing. The sealing is your angel of Revelation 17:1-4, and that is the sealing of the 144,000. So this is what this is all about. Okay, the phrase in that day points back to the preceding events, back to unto the 12th chapter. There we find that the event is the great morning in Jerusalem, chapter 12, verses 12 to 14. So in that day, in the day of that great morning, this fountain is to be opened. For the finding of the time that the morning takes place, for it is necessary that we go further back and to the 12th chapter. Better still, we should review the chapter from the first verse on, because there are brought to view seven groups of separate and distinct events, one following the other. For the outstanding events of each group are these. Number one, Jerusalem is to be made a cup of trembling, and the nations of the earth are to be in the siege, both against Judah, the house of David, the house of Yahweh, and that is the same as Micah 4, 1 through 3 and 4, and Isaiah 2, verse 1 through 3 and 4, and against Jerusalem. Jerusalem is the capital city of Judea, the two-tribe kingdom. Jerusalem is not the capital. It's only the capital of the ten tribes when they come back and join themselves unto the two tribes, Judah and Benjamin, and start bringing themselves down once a year or three times in the year to worship at Jerusalem. They're supposed to come down at Pentecost, Atonement, and Passover. They're supposed to come down those three times a year. At least. At least the men folks are. In that day, the nations are to gather together against them. Number three, in that day, the Yahweh is to smite every horse, that means every leader, that is leading against the house of Yahweh, the house of David, the house of Yahweh, to destroy it with astonishment, and his rider with madness. Okay. Now, who is his rider? Well, the horse is the leader, the man. Who's his rider? That's Satan. Satan or an evil angel attending him. So it's not going to only smite the man himself, but it's going to start smite his attending spirit. All right, you go to Revelation 9:16 to support that idea. For it says in Revelation 9:16 there are 2 million horses, which are the leaders, righteous people, leading people here on this earth in the great battle against evil there in this 12th hour. And you have their horsemen that are riding these horses. And there are as many horsemen as there are horses in Revelation 9:16. And these are all righteous beings. 200 million here on earth and 200 million attending spirits from heaven in the form of physical angels. So you have 400 million mathematically figured out there in Revelation 9:16 that is going to join this great army mentioned there in Joel chapter 2. There has never been nothing like it before or ever after it, ever in the history of this world, an army like that. Okay. So he said, in that day the Yahweh is to smite every minister, self-appointed minister, without the spirit of inspiration, that are self-sent. I just told you about it there Jeremiah on Facebook just a little bit ago. On Jeremiah 23, you have verse 9 through 40, talking about the false prophets of Israel that have sent themselves, but Yahweh haven't sent them, but they sent themselves. All right, rising up early and corrupting their ways and sinning themselves, claiming to have a message and to want to be somebody, and they're nothing. Okay. Number three, in that day, the Yahweh is to smite every horse with astonishment and his rider with madness, and he is also to open his eyes upon the house of Judah, though that is the lawgiver. And why Judah? Because Shiloh has come. The prophecy of Genesis 49:10. It says, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, meaning a rod that represents the authority for Yahweh's government shall not depart from Judah, the house of David. And we represent that house of David today, and we have that scepter. We have that scepter of Judah. We have been appointed as antithetical lawgivers for the 12 tribes of Israel that are at hand to come and unite with the two tribes. Israel, making one great kingdom again, once again, in the hand of him who hath been given the commission to put them together and to join those two sticks together of Ephraim and Judah. There in Jeremiah 23 and Jeremiah 33. Okay? So it says, for the governors of Judah are then to say in their hearts, the inhabitants of Jerusalem shall be my strength, and the Yeshua of the host, their Savior. Number four. And that day, Jerusalem is to be inhabited. And that day, in the 12th parabolic hour, that's the day we're in right now, the last hour of prophetic history, the last parabolical hour on the 12-hour time clock. Yeshua said in John 11:9, are there not 12 hours in the day? Work while you have the light. Okay, your first 11-hour workers of Israel that worked in the day. The first 11-hour workers, they were the seed sowers, but they were not the harvesters. They were just seed sowers. Of course, they harvested in their time zone, all right enough. Every hour on the parabolic time clock had sowers, reapers, harvesters in their time zone. So likewise here in the 12th hour, we only have harvesters, not reapers, not sowers, but reapers and harvesters. There's no sowers in the 12th parabolic hour, the last one. Only harvesters. Okay? So it says, in that day, Jerusalem is to be inhabited again. Number five, in that day, he that is feeble among them is to be as David and the house of David. That's who we represent right here at Liberty Hill, Texas, and the Austin, Texas area. For those of you around the world, look on your world maps, look on your United States maps, and pinpoint Austin, Texas. We're about 40 miles due north of Austin, Texas. All right, it's at number six. In that day, the Yeshua is to seek to destroy all the nations that come against Jerusalem. Now it says Yeshua is going to come to this earth. He's invisible unto all the inhabitants of the earth except the house of the tribe of Judah, the house of David, which is the same thing as the kingdom of heaven here on earth. And Yeshua is the author. He's the author of the salvation for Israel. It says so right there in Hebrews chapter 5. It said he had, by his suffering, he became the author. Okay, so how does that work? Well, we go and read it in Hebrews chapter 5. Let's look at it. This is, and being made perfect, verse 9. And being made perfect, he became the author of the eternal salvation unto all them that obey him. So this is the only ones he's going to reveal himself to when he comes back to set up this kingdom of heaven here on earth, which he has already returned. He's been doing this for 15 years, folks. Yeshua has already returned. He came to the threshold of the house at Passover 2002, closed out the judgment of the dead, the 11th parabolic hour, and closed out the servant of the candlestick, of led us here, and put him out to pasture. And he raised up a new leadership and a new kingdom, a purified kingdom at that, or at least with the sanctuary system completely restored, and that will purify the kingdom of heaven once it's completely restored and put into operation full time, the ordained system of true worship. Once that's happened, then you can declare the kingdom of heaven is restored here on earth. Okay, now, as we get back to our study, it says, we're on page 14 of Time to Greeting, Volume 1, Number 18, entitled, At the End of Human Idols and Their Worshippers. This is what we're dealing with, folks. This opening up this fountain for sin and uncleanness here in Zechariah 13 and Ezekiel 47 river, one and the same. It is for one purpose, and that's the end of human idols and their worshipers. Once this here river gets the flowing full stream after it gets out of the sanctuary, after it gets outside of the outer walls of the sanctuary, then it goes into and makes a big river. Then it's free to go then throughout the whole world. Okay? He will then pour upon the house of David and upon the inhabitants of Jerusalem the spirit of grace and of supplication. Number 7, in that day there is to be a great mourning in Jerusalem. Thus one event is contingent upon another, for the last of which is the great mourning in Jerusalem. In the day of these events, therefore, the fountain for sin and for uncleanness is open. Let us now connect Zechariah 13:1 with verse 2. Zechariah 13:1-2, in that day, in the day the great mourning takes place, there shall be a fountain open of the house of David and to the inhabitants of Jerusalem for sin and for uncleanness. And it shall come to pass in that day, saith the Yahshua the host, that I will cut off the names of the idols out of the land, and they shall no more be remembered, and also I will cause the prophets and their unclean spirit to pass out of the land. Two things that stand out clearly in these events. Number one, that the house of David must come into the existence before the cleansing fountain is open. And so, the house of David came into existence in 1970 at Kermit, Texas. My goodness, that's been a long time ago. In 1970. That would be 47 years. Come this Passover of 2017, it would be 47 years that the house of David has come into existence in our day. Okay. In other words, it was here all the time, but it came into view in 1970. The house of David was identified in 1930 by V.T. Hollis, the Shepherd's Rod. And he named his message the Davidian, Seventh-day Adventist. He named it Davidians, the house of David. And he identified the house of David being identified in the prophecy of Ezekiel 4 as showing up in 1890 in the prophecy for the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and that 430-year allegory given to Abraham to be an allegory for a duplication in the antitype in these last days for applying a 430-year prophecy unto the house of Israel in these last days that was applied unto Abraham when he was called out of Ur of the Chaldees at the age of 75, began a 430-year prophecy for Israel in the type and an allegory to be carried out in the last days with an identical 430-year prophecy, and that was carried out in, that has been carried out in our day since 1500, starting with Martin Luther. Martin Luther was in the same position that Abraham was in at the age of 75 when he was called out of Ur of the Chaldees. Martin Luther was in the same identical antitypical position that Abraham was in, being called out of Catholic Church in 1500 A.D. 430 years later brought us down to 1930, and the deliverance, the beginning of the deliverance of the, with the second exodus of the children of Israel out of spiritual Egypt, and that spiritual Egypt was the Adventist Church. Okay. That's where the type was born. Abraham and his descendants ended up down in Egypt, and for a 215-year captivity, under slavery for 215 years. Their sojourn was 430 years altogether, but it wasn't all down in Egypt. It started with Abraham whenever he was camping out in Canaan, when he crossed the river Euphrates at the age of 75. That's when the 430 years began. But it all wasn't spent down in Egypt. There's 215 years definitely spent down in Egypt for the enslavement of the children of Israel. And but they were called out at the end of 430 years, and they end up at the Sinai, Mount Sinai there in South Saudi Arabia today. That's where it was at. And it was exactly straight east across the Red Sea that the children ended up crossing over the sea. Well, anyway, Sinai, they crossed over, they had to go south, then they had to go straight east into Mount Sinai. They arrived there in the third month after they come out of Egypt in 1500 B.C. Moses led them out of Egypt 1500 B.C. and the children of Israel ended up at Sinai 3 months later in the wilderness of Sin, which was the part today of the geographical location of Israel's property, in the wilderness on the west side of the Jordan. Okay, now, the children of Israel arrived in the third month. What took place in the third month of Yahweh's calendar year, creation calendar year? The Pentecost. That's when Moses was called up into the mount to get the law, was at Pentecost in the third month. He spent 40 days up there getting instructions about the full ramification of Yahweh's whole law, James 2:10. Whosoever shall keep the whole law, but yet offend in one point, is guilty of all. So, the children of Israel had promised Moses before he went up into the mount. They said, all that Yahweh has said we will do. So Moses believed them, and he took that with him. He went to Yahweh up in the mount, and he said, well, the people sit down there on earth, they made a covenant with me, and you, that all that you have said that they will do. So we're going to, I'm going to trust that they're going to keep their word, and so Yahweh says, you're going to spend 40 days with me and getting the full ramification of the whole law that I require for Israel today. And that is the moral law of the Ten Codes, the Ten Commandments, and that is the written laws of the sanctuary written in a book on papyrus. But my ten laws are going to be written on stone. So you had the whole law of Yahweh written. Of ten commandments on stone, and the rest of them written on papyrus, on something with like a pen and ink. And it was all rolled up and put in the side pocket of the ark. But the ten commandments wasn't rolled up in the book, papyrus. It was secreted under the mercy seat and the ark of the covenant. Okay. I guess it's created. No, I guess it's above the mercy seat or underneath it. Anyway, it was placed under the mercy seat, and the scroll of the law was placed in the side pocket of the ark of the covenant. But nevertheless, they were both attached to the ark of the covenant. The ark of the law of the Ten Commandments condemns, but provides no remedy, but information inside of the scroll of the law that's in the side pocket of the ark is the information that gives you the remedy, that shows you how to get the remedy to get rid of your sin that you committed against the Ten Commandments that was under the mercy seat above. Do you get the point? All right, now it says, two things stand out clearly in these verses. Let's go back now and read Zechariah 13, verse 1 and 2 again. In that day, in the day this great mourning takes place, there shall be a fountain open at the house of David and to the inhabitants of Jerusalem for sin and for uncleanness. And it shall come to pass in that day, says the Yahshua, that I will cut off the names of the idols out of the land, and they shall no more be remembered. And also I will cause the prophets and the unclean spirit to pass out of the land. Now when you read that, you think he's going to cause all of these here sinners and wicked people that live down the street from you, which is your Gentile neighbors, you think he's talking about them. But no, he's not. He's talking about members of the house of Israel that are walking, talking idols. That's when he says he's going to cause the going to cut off the names of the idols out of the land. All these false Seventh-day Adventist ministers is what he's talking about today. Idols. He's going to cut them off out of the land. Well, what's going to do when he cuts them off? Where are they going to go? Well, it says there in the prophecy of Isaiah 31, verse 9, it tells you exactly where they're going to go, and I'm going to read it to you. It says they're going to pass back over to their stronghold for fear of the ensign. If I can hurriedly get to that, it says, and he shall pass over to his stronghold for fear, and his princes shall be afraid of the ensign, saith the Yahshua, whose fire is in Zion, and his furnace in Jerusalem. Now, what does fire mean? Fire means judgment, and the furnace means the place where the fire is generated. Okay? And that's in the sanctuary in the ark. Now, why do I say that? It's the Ten Commandments and the Ark of the Covenant that's underneath the mercy. Why do I say that fire is found in the sanctuary and the Ark of the Covenant? Well, all you got to go do now is read Hebrews chapter 12 and read about the last verse. It says, for our Yahweh is a consuming fire. Hebrews 12:29. Now, where does that fire come from? Well, Yahshua's presence is found in that law of the Ten Commandments underneath the mercy seat. It's called the Shekinah. Okay? So, that's Yahweh's presence in the form of the Holy Spirit there in that Ark of the Covenant. That's Yahweh's presence there. And he says, Yahweh is a consuming fire. Alright, what did it say happened to Aaron's two sons that kindled strange fire in the temple, in the sanctuary? It says fire came from the altar, from the Ark of the Covenant there in the sanctuary. Came from out of that mercy seat, where it says there's no mercy here for these priests that are violating the sanctity and kindling strange fire. They let the Holy Spirit fire go out, and they're putting their own interpretation, and they're operating the sanctuary shows by their own rules, while they're seducing women at the door of the sanctuary. Women are coming and bringing their offerings, and they're just taking them into a side quarter there and seducing them here in the sanctuary. That's the laws they made up, these priests here in the sanctuary. Well, that's where the Adventists are. They're a self-appointed priest in the sanctuary of the Adventist Church, and they're seducing their people with false doctrine at the door. When they come to the door and come on in, they seduce them with false lies and theories and doctrine, but they take their money and make them pay to hear their false doctrines and their false theories, and they're sending their souls to hell. They're making the people pay, these ministers, for feeding them with strange fire and sending their souls to hell. Same difference, folks. No difference. All right, now, as we go ahead and read, we're on page 14 now of Time to Greeting, Volume 1, number 18. It says, two things stand out clearly in these verses, that the house of David must come into the existence before its cleansing fountain is open. So the house of David came into existence in 1930 by V.T. Holler. All right. When is the cleansing opened up then? When is the information opened up? The cleansing opens up in the 12th hour. When the 12th hour opened up, 2002 at the Passover. Okay. That the cleansing begins with turning off the names of the idols and turning out and throwing out of the land the false prophets and the unclean spirit. Not only are the false prophets to be thrown out of the house, out of the temple, but then to be thrown off the land. Well, the prophet that I ruled, that I served under, Kermit, Texas, for 33 years, he was cut off. Of course, he kept on breathing in and out for the next 12 years, all right, and he kept on pretending that he was in charge. Obviously, he wasn't, because he ended up in a nursing home being cared for by the medical doctors of Ekron, the ones that shoot you with these poisonous drugs. He refused the bomb of Gilead that was sent to him there at Kermit, Texas, Rhoda W. Johnson did, that would have healed him of all of his infirmities. He refused that because his wife was against it, so he said, well, my wife knows best, so if she's against it, but then I can't use it either. That's how that turned out. And so the fountain for sin and uncleanness was the balm of Gilead that Yahweh sent to the house of David. And the false shepherd that's in charge of the candlestick at that time, when that balm of Gilead came to him, and it came to him first, it came to me second. Brother Johnson got it first. And in 1997, he turned it down. My wife and I took a hold of it in 1997. And 5 years later, Brother Johnson was cut off, and we were retained. Number one, because we took a hold of the balm of Gilead that will cleanse the body of all defilements, used properly. We know that. We've used it extensively, and it has helped us so tremendously. But yet, we are yet to reach 100% cleansing, but we are well on our way. But you have to get a full knowledge of all the healing herbs and everything. You have to practice right living. And everything. You have to establish right living habits, healthful habits. And I dare say the person go back to Ellen G. White's 8 points of counsel on that, they might be amazed at how effective that would be today for us today to employ those 8 principles that she counseled on way back to over 100 years ago. I don't know those exactly 8 points at this time, but in order, but I do know it's at least about 4 of them. It says pure water, sunshine, fresh air, exercise, and also proper rest, so many hours at night, and anyway, she listed 8 main things, and proper nutrition on all the things you eat, everything. And she ruled out flesh eating. She ruled out the unclean foods. She told what they were. And so there's 8 main points that she had. So we would do well to go back and pick up on those and just employ those, and we'd be in good shape. My son called me today, and he's in his 50s. He's had a lifelong friend for 40 years. And she's went to the doctor today and discovered she has full-blown lung cancer. They want to get her started on radiation. But she's read enough of Sister White. She's an Adventist. She's read enough of Sister White's health books to know that radiation would kill her off faster by using it than it would if she'd leave it alone. But she had enough sense to know what to do to start recovery. So she told my son, she says, I'm went home. I went home and I cleaned out my ice box of all meat and all dairy products and all things that had anything chemicals in it. And she says, I went and got me a bunch of alkaline water. And she said, I read where the body needs to be 50% alkaline and 50% acid, and that way cancer cannot live in your body. She said, I've read where other people have done the same thing and got over their cancer just by simply following a program of restoring their body back to a 50% alkaline and a 50% acid, by raising their oxygen level, by using cayenne pepper and soluble acetone, cleaning out their arteries and all this stuff. So she knew, she knows the right things to do. And she admitted that she had gotten off of the path of right living, and that she had followed the flesh pots of Egypt, and that is what got her into trouble. But now she knows what to do to correct it, because she has read Sister White's on all of this. So this is what I'm talking about, folks. It works. She said, I know other Adventists that have done the same thing and got well, she said. So I know it works. Other Adventists have gone back to Sister White's original counsel on diet and foods, and they got themselves well. No medication. They didn't have to go back to the doctor no more or anything. In our previous study of the 10th chapter of Zechariah, we learned that these idols are the kind that speak that they are men. There is no doubt, therefore, that these are ministering brethren who the laity are idolizing. As a result, the laity are blindly following them, and whatever decisions their idols make concerning what is the truth and what is error, what is sin and what is righteousness, those are the decisions which the laity does carry out. These idols, therefore, are creating a situation similar unto that which the priests, scribes, and Pharisees created in the days of Yahshua's first advent. Consequently, the idol worshippers are not troubling themselves unto personally investigate fresh messages, and they are thereby ignorantly following men rather than Yahshua and his advancing truth. These, along with the prophets and the unclean spirits, shall pass out of the land. Zechariah 13:3-5. And it shall come to pass that when they shall yet prophesy, then his father and his mother that begat him shall say unto him, Thou shalt not live, for thou speakest lies in the name of Yahshua. And his father and his mother that begat him shall thrust him through when he prophesied. And it shall come to pass in that day that the prophets shall be ashamed every one of his vision when he hath prophesied. Neither shall they wear a rough garment to deceive, but he shall say, I am no prophet, I am a husbandman, for man taught me to keep cattle from my youth. That the cleansing begins with cutting off the names of the idols and throwing out of the land the false prophets and the unclean spirits. In our previous study of the 10th chapter of Zechariah, we learned that these idols are the kind that speak that they are men. There is no doubt, therefore, that these are mentioned brethren who the laity are idolizing. As a result, the laity are blindly following them, and whatever decisions their idols make concerning what is truth and what is error, what is sin and what is righteousness, those are the decisions which the laity does carry out. These idols, therefore, are creating a situation similar unto that which the priests, scribes, and Pharisees created in the days of Yahshua's first advent. Consequently, the idol worshippers are not troubling themselves. Personally investigate fresh messages, and they are thereby ignorantly following men rather than Yahshua and his advancing truth. These, along with the prophets and the unclean spirits, shall pass out of the land. Zechariah 13:3-5. And it shall come to pass that when they shall prophesy, yet prophesy, then his father and his mother that begat him. Okay, I've already read that, haven't I? Now let's read it again. It shall say unto him, Thou shalt not live. Now let's fast forward on down to now the 16th hour. I was rereading stuff that I've already done. Because they have seduced my people, saying peace, and there is was no peace, and one built up a wall, and lo, others daubed it with the untempered mortar. Say unto them which daubed it with the untempered mortar, that it shall fall. There shall be an overflowing shower, and ye, O great hailstone shall fall, and a stormy wind shall rend it. Lo, when the wall is fallen, shall it not be said unto you, where is the daubing wherewith you have daubed it? Therefore thus saith the Yahweh Elohim, I will even rend it with a stormy wind and my fury, and there shall be an overflowing shower and mine anger, and great hailstones in my fury to consume it. So will I break down the wall that you have daubed with the untempered mortar, and bring it down unto the ground, so that the foundation thereof shall be discovered, and it shall fall, and you shall be consumed in the midst thereof, and you shall know that I am the Yahweh. Thus will I accomplish my wrath upon the wall, and upon them that have daubed it with the untempered mortar, and will say unto you, the wall is no more. Now the day that daubed it, Ezekiel 13:3-15. What a fearful responsibility rests upon those who carelessly handle the word of Yahweh, who pose as sole guardians over the people. Both they and their abomination will fall in the ditch. Indeed, if any perform a reform is needed in their house of Yahweh, this one is. Having now learned better, let us no longer make idols of men. Let us no longer give place within us unto unclean spirits. Let us rather give the Spirit of Yahweh a chance to lead us into His ever-advancing truth with the personal understanding. Let us be followers of Yahshua and never again of Apollos or of Cephas. Zechariah 13:6-7. And one shall say unto him, what are these wounds in thine hands? Then he shall answer, those with which I was wounded in the house of my friends. Awake, O sword, against my shepherd, and against the man that is my fellow. Now who is the man that is his fellow? That's the angel of the candlestick of Laodicea, Israel, the seventh candlestick, Revelation 1. That's the angel of Laodicea, that's my fellow he's talking about here. And that was Willis W. Johnson. That zeroed right in on the exact person, time, place, and date where it took place. 2002 at Kermit, Texas. Saith the Yahshua of hosts, smite the shepherd, and the sheep shall be scattered, and I will turn my hand upon the little ones. I have no special comments to make on verses 6 and 7 other than what is commonly understood among Christians. It is plain to see, though, that after the Yahshua's shepherd is smitten, then it is that the Yahshua will separate his people, Zechariah 13:8, and it shall come to pass that in all the land, saith the Yahshua, two parts therein shall be cut off and die, but the third part shall be left therein. So two-thirds of the people in the land are going to be cut off and die. Only one-third is going to be left. And this separation, according to verse 8, the people are divided in three parts. Evidently, they are the saints, the hypocrites, and the heathen. For the two latter parts are to be cut off, separated from the saints. And they are to die concerning the future of the former third. Let us read. So in 2002 at Kermit, Texas, there were three parts represented there in the Gilead Center. And Rodas Johnson's congregation. And I was there in that congregation, and I represented a third that was cut off. I mean, that was separated from the other two that were third cut off. So Rodas Johnson, the leader that was cut off, represents the hypocrites. That's his household, that was his. The hypocrites were the ordained ministers of Gilead, saying that was Rodas Johnson and his son Daniel, and Daniel's son Roddy. They were all three anointed to be associate ministers to Rodas Johnson. So those were the ministers of the house of Gilead Center that was termed as hypocrites. You go to Matthew 45:42-47 for that explanation on that hypocrite. He's called a slothful servant that had began to smite his fellow servants and eat and drink with the drunken, because he said to Yahshua, till master of the house delayeth his coming. So he got tired of waiting for him. He said, well, I'm tired of waiting for him. I'm just going to go back to having fun and become an idol worshiper again. That's exactly what that hypocrite did, the leader of the congregation of Israel at Gilead Center. So he was classified as one-third of hypocrites. Well, the heathen was the rest of the laity in the church that believed him and stayed with him when they were cut off. So those represented the two-thirds in the house of Israel, starting at Gilead Center. The family, the hypocrites, the leaders, and then the ones that stayed with them of the laity of other families. I represented the third that was against both of them, that I sided against, sided against all the abominations done in the house of Israel, and that's what constituted a one-third of the of Gilead Center. Okay. Paragraph 13:9, and I will bring the third part through the fire, and will refine them as silver is refined, and will try them as gold is tried. They shall call on my name, and I will hear them. I will say, it is my people. And they shall say, the Yahweh is my Elohim. In this connection, the gospel prophet was instructed to write, behold, the day of the Yahweh cometh, cruel both with wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, and he shall destroy the sinners thereof out of it, for the stars of heaven and the constellations thereof shall not give their light. The sun shall be darkened in his going down, and the moon shall not cause her light to shine. And I will punish the world for their evil and the wicked for their iniquity. And I will cause the arrogancy of the proud to cease, and will lay low the hardness of the terrible. I will make a man more precious than fine gold, even a man than the golden wedge of Ophir. Therefore I will shake the heavens, and the earth shall remove out of her place in the wrath of the Yahshua of the host, and in the day of his fierce anger. And it shall come, it shall be as the chaste roe, and as a sheep that no man taketh up. They shall every man turn unto his own people, and flee every one into his own land. Every one that is found shall be thrust through, and every one that is joined unto them shall fall by the sword. Isaiah 13:9-15. Under this warning, the prophet Zephaniah adds, and it shall come to pass at that time that I will search Jerusalem with candles, and punish the men that are settled on their leaves, that say in their hearts, the Yahshua will not do good, neither will he do evil. Therefore their goods shall become a booty, and their houses a desolation. They shall also build houses, but not inhabit them, and they shall plant vineyards, but not drink the wine thereof. For the great day of the Yahshua is near, it is near, and hasteth greatly. Even the voice of the day of the Yahshua, the mighty man shall cry there bitterly, means the prophet, the false shepherd that got cut off. That's what caused him to cry there bitterly, because he is on the outskirts looking outside now, because he has been driven out of the antithetical Garden of Eden, the kingdom of heaven here on earth, set up by restoring all the sanctuary system completely. That's what represented returning back to Eden, was in 1970 when Willis Johnson was given the commission and the light to restore the sanctuary system and put it back in the rightful order. The very thing that was shown Sister White in 1844, that was to take place after her days, wasn't given to her, the great prophetess that she was, wasn't given to the next great prophet, V.T. Hardy, 1930, Shepherd Rod, wasn't given to his successor, Ben Roden, was given to his lonely tag-along, his successor to all of this line of the prophets, Willis W. Johnson, 1970, given, exalted unto heaven and appointed privilege unto the knowledge of the full restoration of the sanctuary here on earth. And did you know the only one that had been done to before was Moses? Moses was the only first one and the only one that Yahweh had taken up into his sanctuary for Mount Sinai, 1500 B.C. He took Moses up there. And he kept him for 40 days and taught him the whole law of heaven, of the sanctuary, restoration of every right down to the minutest point. And as you know, Verlis Johnson was the first one in 3,500 years. He's the second one that was taken into Yahweh's confidence to give in all the secrets of the restoration of the kingdom of heaven here on earth, with the sanctuary completely restored and all of its divine institutions. Sister White prophesied about those divine institutions to restore, but she wasn't given them to restore. She wasn't given the feast days to restore and Yahweh's government to restore. It wasn't for her day. She only had the three angels' messages. All this information opened up in the fourth and fifth angel that was given to V.T. Hardiff, Ben Roden, and Verlis Johnson. Verlis Johnson got the fourth and fifth together in 1970, and he restored all the laws of Moses that Moses was given to restore. He's the second man in the history of Israel, going back 3,500 years coming out of Egypt, that was given this privilege. And what did he do? Well, at the end of Verlis Johnson's ministry, he committed a great sin, and Yahweh was willing to showed it to what it was. He showed it to him by me, and all he had to do was repent and confess of it. And all the sins that he had committed and what he had done, all he had to do was just acknowledge everything that I told him, repent of it, and he would have been reinstated. But Moses repented, and Moses was reinstated. And Moses was taken into heaven because of his, after his reinstatement. Verlis Johnson wouldn't repent, though, and he wasn't reinstated. He was spewed out, and someone else was put in his place, showing that he wasn't reinstated. And I was the one put in his place. Okay, this brings us to the close of our study. This hour, contact us at the 11th hour call. And that's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close this service now with a song. This brings us to the close of our study. This hour, contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close this service now with a song that I've written, one of my sentimental favorites, and that is entitled, A Fountain Has Been Opened.
Hold up the light, give me power.
of me of the land that I long to understand. I have my sin, there's nothing to be seen. Where I plan to live forever in that land where the soul never dies.